You may already know that the CS website was down, and we just dropped the quiz if you haven't been able to take it. Any question regarding that? Yes.
So, if you did take the quiz, you still...
No, no, it's just dropped.
Okay, so there's no grade for it?
There's no, yes. Houses, there's no grade for it.
Will there still be like a hand to compose it?
Yes, the answer being is posted, there's a quiz is not working.
Yes.
Is that what kind of like one of the 10% of like quizzes that are dropped or?
Does it count as one of the 10% that are dropped is the question, and the answer is no.
No.
It is dropped unconditionally for everyone, not part of that.
Just assume that there was no quiz in this week, pre-quiz. Right? We will still have the first quiz. So today we will talk about cache performance. Until now we talked about how we can build direct mapped cache, then we talked about types of misses, we talked about how we can increase associativity to reduce conflict misses, and we talked about a bunch of parameters in caches that can affect the cache performance. But what we want to learn now is looking at a code fragment, how we can reason about the performance of that code if it has some specific configuration of cache. And this is the example we went through last week. We had an array of 1024 elements, and within the loop, we were just sequentially going through each element, but we were taking two partial sums, one for the odd elements and one for the even elements. And the assumptions here were we are keeping only this array, which is 4 kilobytes of data in our cache. We will just assume that everything else, they are in register, so things are easier to reason about. And our cache is a 2 kilobyte direct mapped cache with block size 16 byte. So essentially what was happening was when we were going through the loop, we will access the first element in our array, and that will be a miss because not the cache is empty, and we will fetch that block into the cache. But cache blocks are 16 bytes. So essentially, if we bring one block in our cache and we are accessing the rest of the elements sequentially, then the next three elements should hit in the cache. So for array at element zero, if it's a miss, we bring the block in the cache and that block can hold 4 integers. So then we get 3 hits after that. So essentially we were having one miss at every 4 accesses. And notice that the size of the data we are accessing, that's much larger than our cache size. So once we have accessed 2 kilobytes of data, we will actually run out of space in our cache, and because it's a direct map, things will wrap around in the first set again, and we will replace those first 2 kilobytes of data and then put the next 2 kilobytes of data. But the access pattern is still the same. If I access one element, array element, the first one is miss, and then we get some hits from that cache block. So essentially the number of misses were the size of data divided by the size of cache block, or the other way to think about is we had 1024 elements and each fourth element was having a miss. So 1024 divided by 4, so that's the number of cache misses. So now we want to see that reordering the accesses, how that affect the cache part of it. So this is almost the same code fragment with slightly different ordering. We still have this array of 1024 elements, which is 4 kilobytes of data. But here, instead of calculating the partial, even and odd sums within one loop, we have just divided it into two loops. So in the first loop, we iterate through all the elements, but get the sum for the even elements. Once we are done, we iterate through the whole array again and calculate the odd sum. And all the other assumptions are the same. So think about how this will affect the cache misses when we have a 2 kilobyte direct map cache with 16 bytes of cache box. So I will give you maybe 2-3 minutes to think about it. Thinks that we will have the same number of misses. More misses? Okay, apparently that one is. So it is true we will have more misses, but I guess let's go to the example to see why. So we are accessing 4 kilobytes of data in the first iteration. And in the second iteration, we actually have some reuse. Like if I have the 0th element in our cache, then I'm reusing that in my second iteration with array element 1. So because they are within the same block, we could have exploited spatial locality. But the question is, when I get to this second loop, do I have the data that I used before, or did I already evicted it? And what happens here is we are accessing every block, and essentially 4 kilobyte is much higher than 2 kilobyte, and it's a direct map cache. So we actually evict the first 2 kilobyte of our data, and when we get to the second loop, the second 2 kilobytes of data is in the cache. But this loop starts with element 0, and that is not in our cache anymore. So essentially, we bring that block, and we have to evict whatever we had in, which we brought by the first loop, and everything essentially becomes a maze. Whatever misses we were having, it was one miss per block. This is still true for the first loop, and it is still true in the second loop. There is one miss per block. So the total number of miss increases by twice x. So now you can try to reason about that. Okay, this is a direct map cache. We are having all these conflicts. So maybe we can just increase the associativity and try to keep the reuse, the block which we are reusing in the cache to get some locality. So before we get to that, I guess let's try to see what addresses or which blocks are mapping in the same set. So first one is still our direct map cache, and so the block 0 to 3, like the array element 0 to 3, these are actually within the first block, which is 16 byte, and this will map to set 0. And because this is a direct map cache, the next block will be mapped in the set 1 and so on. And essentially, we have 128 sets. We reach array element 511, and then we wrap around. So the blocks which are at address 2 kilobyte, they actually get mapped to set 0 again. And essentially, because this is a direct map cache, we have to evict this block at 0 and put this block at 2 kilobyte because we just don't have more associativity. But what happens if we increase this associativity and have a two-way cache? So the first catch here is we are still keeping the cache size the same. If we add more associativity, that will mean that now we have a smaller number of sets. We used to have 128 sets, now we have 64 sets. So we are wrapping around at 1 kilobyte instead of 2 kilobyte. But how does the blocks map into this set configuration? So the block at address 0, that still maps to set 0. So that is element 0 to 3. Then array element 4 to 7 goes to set 1 and so on. And at set 63, we have these array elements from 252 to 255. So now we have to wrap around. And the block which is at address 1 kilobyte, array index 256, that maps to the same set, and we will go through the whole thing again, and essentially at 2 kilobyte, we will wrap around to set index 0 again. So all these blocks at 0, 1 kilobyte, 2 kilobyte, they all are mapping at the same set. So what will happen if we have set associativity, we touch the block at address 0 first. Our cache is empty, so we put the block in our set. Then at some point, we will address this next block. Because it's a two-way set associative cache, we will still put it in our this set. And now, when we come to this block, we have to replace something. And this is, if we consider that our replacement policy is least recently used, essentially we will replace the first block at address 0, and now we will have these two blocks in our cache. So so now think about what happens when we go to our second loop here, like the one here. This one. So that starts from address 0 again. And when it will try to access address 0, that will map to our set 0. And it has two valid blocks there, but it's just not the block that we want. So essentially, we will replace the second block, which is now our least recently used block, and put block 0 there. Which means that even when we have increased the associativity and we are keeping two blocks in one set, it's just not enough to keep the block that we will reuse again. So that's why two-way set associativity is not giving us any benefit here. Any questions? Yes.
So we start with 15 blocks on the third kilobyte, is that?
So we will still evict blocks at 4 kilobytes. Let me think about it. No, yeah, you are right. So here, once we have get to here, block array 512, we actually have 2 kilobytes of data. So anything we access after 2 kilobytes of data needs to replace something in our set. And here we have two candidates for replacement, but LRU says that replace the block which we used least recently, which is the first block we accessed.
Okay.
Any more questions? Okay. So let's see another example. Here, we have a structure. The structure contains two integer values and then array of some more values. In the previous examples, we were scanning through the whole array. We were touching every element, right? But here, what we are doing is we are taking the structure, the array of this structure, which has 8 elements, and we don't want to touch the whole structure. What we are doing is we are iterating through this array of this item, and we are accessing this first element in the first array and the second element in the second array. I guess if you look at the size of the structure, there are like 2 integers and then there are 126 integers in the array. So essentially it's 512 bytes. We have an array which has 8 elements, so the size of the data array is still 4 kilobytes. But the difference here is we are not accessing the array sequentially. We are not accessing all the elements. We are just accessing this particular element, value A and value B. So essentially in the first loop, we have 8 accesses to each item I dot A value. And for the second loop, we are accessing the second element in our structure, which is B underscore value. And because these two values are sequential, we will assume that mostly they are within the same cache block. So what are the other differences? The other difference is now that means that within this code fragment, there are just 16 accesses. There are 8 accesses in this line, and there are 8 accesses in this line. So essentially, there are 16 accesses. And our cache is 2 kilobyte direct map with same 16 byte of cache box. So if we don't consider anything, like our cache is big enough to contain 16 values, but there might be cases where it can still introduce misses. And that can happen when, any idea? When these 16 values map to the same sets and there might be some conflict. So what you need to figure out to answer the question that what are the values that get mapped to the same set, and when we access the same block over again, is it in the cache or not? So I will give you maybe 2-3 minutes to think about it. So you can talk to your friends and neighbors in sitting beside you. Anyone wants to volunteer? Yes?
Is it 2 to the 9?
How many data cache misses? How many accesses do we have here? So I think you're thinking about we are accessing all the values, right? We are not. We are only, like, even if we have these 4 kilobytes of data where we have 8 elements of item, we are only accessing this first integer in each item. So there are 8 accesses here, and then there are 8 accesses here. So if we just think about the capacity, our cache is big enough to hold 16 accesses, 16 cache blocks. But what we need to be, what we need to consider is if any of these cache blocks belong, or if they're mapped to the same set or not. In that case, they will evict each other and we won't be able to exploit this spatial locality. So how do we determine if something maps to the same set? essentially this is a direct map cache which has a size of 2 kilobyte, right? So that means that after, if we have this sequential large data chunk of 4 kilobyte, every 2 kilobyte needs to replace something, right? So every 2 kilobytes of data must have be mapped into the same sets. The size of the whole structure is 512 bytes, because there are 128 integers. So essentially it means that item 0 to 3, that will become these 2 kilobytes of chunks of data. And after that, we have to replace whatever we have already bought into our, whatever we have already brought into our cache by item 4 to 7. So essentially everything we access here is still missed, but the question is, what's the state of the cache once we have completed this loop? So it has the A value, the cache blocks that contain the A value for items 4 to 7. Because item 0 and item 4, they actually map in the same set, so when we touched item 4, we had to evict item 0. So now when we get to the next loop, the first thing we will touch is item 0. And assuming A and B would be in the same cache block, we find that the set where it maps to contains the block, the item 4 now. So it becomes a miss, so we actually have to do the whole thing again. So essentially all the accesses here becomes a miss. So similar to the prior one, now you can think about that, what happens if we increase the associativity? But I guess that I will let you think about it later. But the difference here was, even though we have this large chunk of data, we were not accessing all of the elements. So if you can think about the, this is similar to accessing a large chunk of data, but instead of accessing every element, we were just accessing the 128th element. So this is what we were doing. Like, we were accessing just one element, even though the structure had 128 integers. So yeah, this is the same code, but if we assume that we have more set associativity, what will happen? And as I said, item 0 and item 4, they will all map to the same set. So you have to think about what are the elements that are mapping in the same set when they're evicting each other. And maybe, so this is an exercise for home. So today we will actually start talking about cache performance, how we can increase the performance of our applications by taking into account how the cache works. And one very important application people use is operating on very large matrix. So for example, matrix multiplication or different type of operation on matrices. So before we get into the details, so these are some terminology issues. So we will assume that our input matrix is A, and the dimensions are n into n. But instead of allocating two-dimensional array, we will just assume that we allocate a large consecutive chunk of data for this two-dimensional array. The reason is, if the memory sequence we allocated is one large flat data array, it makes it easier to think about how locality affects matrix. So instead of using this notation where we have two index I and j, two axes and element in the matrix, we will just use this one where if we want to access the element at row I, column j, we actually have to multiply the column index by n, the size of the matrix, and then add the number of column. So this is these two are equivalent. Writing array at element ij, we can write it this way, but it still means that we are accessing the element ij in our matrix A. This is the terminology we will use. So let's take a look at one code fragment where essentially what we are doing is we are taking this matrix A and we are taking one row and one column, multiplying them, the elements, taking the sum of the multiplication and putting it in one element of our output matrix, which is B. So each element, to calculate what is the output for each element in B, for example, Bij, we have to take the row in A, which is at which is row I, and column J, and we have to go through all the elements in the row and the column and multiply them, add them, and put them in B. So in order to write this code, we need three loops. The first loop goes through the row, the column, and then once we have which column, which row, we go to each element, multiply them, and add them, and put them in B. So this is one version of this code. But we can decide to write it in some other way. Like we can just decide that instead of iterating over k in the innermost loop, we will just take it and put it at the outer loop. So what does this do? We are still, eventually we'll calculate the multiplication of one row and one column and put it in B, but the order of what we are computing is different now. So here, because k is at the outer loop, what we do is we calculate one element of B, B at ij index, by taking one value of aik and multiplying it with one column. So essentially this ik, this is the same for the inner loop. We multiply with a column and whatever we get the result, we put it in each bij. So essentially for the inner loop, bij, we calculate bij, then the next one and the next one and next one. So there is the spatial locality in bij and spatial locality at akj, and there is temporal locality in aik, because in the inner loop we are reusing aik over and over and over. And for the first version, the temporal locality was in B. So we were essentially taking one row and one column and multiplying different elements, but all the results, the partial sums, were getting reused in this Bij. So if you think about these two versions, they have different kind of locality. This one has more temporal locality for Aik. This one has more temporal locality for Aij. And we want to reason about which one is better when we use when we have these different ordering. And you can see that it's actually very hard to reason about. Like it's hard to say that how this will affect our cache. So one way to know what is happening is we can just run the programs, two different versions, and figure out that which one is faster. So that's what we are doing here. So the first graph, here we are varying the size of our matrix. So the dimension changes from 0 to 500. And in the y-axis, we are showing the number of instructions that we execute. And both of them have the same number of instructions. But if you look at how many cycles it take, now we see that they have very different performance numbers. So the green line shows that when we have k at the outer loop, that is essentially much better than using k in the inner loop. And you can see that there are some outlier values when we use k in the inner loop. So we will get to that later. So these are not random variations. These are happening because how we are using the cache. And we could also get the number of cycles per instruction from our processor using some counters. And this also effectively shows that the number of cycles per instruction is much higher when we have k at the inner loop. And with the k at the outer loop, we actually get much better. We get lower cycles per instruction. So cycles per instruction says that how much time we have to wait until we get the data from memory. So if we need more, if we have to wait for memory more, that means that the number of cycles per instruction would go higher. If actually we don't have to wait even one cycle, it should be one cycle per instruction. And you can see that it's much, much lower than one cycle per instruction. And we can also look at how many cycles we need for each multiplication or add. Basically, this also shows that using the order Kij is much better than using the order ijk. So if we want to take a look at what are the things different, the order where we use Kij, there we have temporal locality for Aik because that's the element we are reusing over and over in the inner loop. And for Bij and Akj, those are the elements we are going through within a row. So that had spatial locality. But the first version, in the first version, we actually had temporal locality for Bij, where that we are using the partial sum and reusing it to calculate the whole sum. But for Aik, that one we were going through the sequentially within a row, so that one had spatial locality. For the column one, I guess we didn't have anything. So essentially, the results say that having spatial locality at Bij and Akj and temporal locality at Aik is much better than this one, much better than the other version we have. But that's just something we found using by running these applications. So there is, we didn't actually reason it in a very systematic way. So I guess I talked about it. So what, before we go to this systematic way of trying to figure out how we should reuse our data, one important thing is these spikes, which I didn't talk about before. So if we just look at closely, we can see that when the array, the matrix size is smaller than the L1 cache, we actually don't have that many misses. So this is read miss per kilo instruction. So if our matrix is smaller than L1 cache, essentially everything fits in. We don't have any extra miss, so things are pretty good. But things happen to become more complicated when the matrix size is greater than our L1 cache. And you can see that it just shows that we have more misses now. But also there are all these outlier values where the read miss gets to really high. Any idea of what's going on here? So I guess I will give one hint. This dot here is at 128. But I guess these are not power of 2. But this one is actually power of 2. So this is related to how things wrap around. Usually cache size is power of 2. So it is related to all the exercises that we have seen before. So when the matrix size is a power of 2, it essentially means that there is a very significant chance that things will be mapped into the same set because usually the cache size is a power of 2. So there we get a really high spike because the conflict misses are just too high. But then you also see that there are these other points, other dots, where these are exactly not a power of 2, but if we multiply them with something, eventually we get to a power of 2. So that's the key, which says that with these ends, essentially there would be addresses given some block size that they will conflict each other. So that is what we are trying to, if we get into the details, that's what we find out. So let's take this n equal to 114. And we try to figure out what are the addresses if we assume that there is this consecutive, like our array is flat. So what would be the address when we access these different elements in our matrix? And what we see that, so when we get to these 114, the set indexes become all zero, which maps to some set index that we, some element that we already accessed. And this is considering that we have 6 bits for our block offset and 6 bits for our set index. So this kind of shows that it's not that we have to look at power of 2 all the time. In addition to that, we also have to be careful about how things get aligned and how we are accessing other blocks. And whenever they map into the same set index, they actually give us higher misses because of all these conflicts. So now let's get back to that, given a code fragment, how we can reason about the cache performance. So changing the loop order changes locality, that we already have seen. But there are multiple types of ordering, or there might be multiple ways to access a matrix. So how can we know which one is better unless we run each of these versions? So what we want to do for that is we want to reason about how much work we do when we have a cache miss. So our goal is to maximize the amount of computation we do when we bring in one cache block in our cache. So this Kij ordering that was doing well or better than the other ordering, but let's try to reason about how much work we are doing for each cache miss with this code fragment. And here we will just assume that our n is really large, it's larger than our cache size, so eventually we care about the cache capacity. Mostly we won't be that concerned with conflicts. So first, in this inner loop, we were touching one Vij, and we were doing some multiplication and putting the value here. But the inner loop, it iterates over j. So in the next iteration, we are not using Bij anymore. It's Bij plus 1. So that means that once we have a miss for Bij, our output, we actually do only one computation. And then we don't use it anymore. For this element, Aik, so even so here we don't have any j here, j in the inner loop. That means that we actually do n computation before we move to the next iteration. So within this inner loop, this Aik remains the same, remains in the cache. We iterate through j and multiply it n times, and essentially the reuse for here, or the number of computations we have done here, is n. For a kj, this element, this is very similar to what we are, okay, I guess almost similar to what we were doing at bij. So because the inner loop iterates over j, there is just one computation over BAKJ. In the next, whenever we increment J, it just means that it moves to the second, the next element in our matrix. So here also, we are just doing one computation per miss. So given all this information, it means that we have most our benefit coming from keeping Aik in our cache and doing n computation. But what we want to do is we want to increase this number of computation per element. So that would give us more benefit. So the goal is whenever we are loading something that is in our cache, we access it. But we want to reuse it as much as possible before we evict it. So how we can do that? Like we don't have any control over the cache, right? So the only way we could do, we could try to maximize our reuse is we choose what we access and we try to reuse that data blocks. So when we are trying to think about it, we have a matrix. When we touch something or we load something, then we want to access those values over and over again. And when we want to write the program, it's better to think about it is we only access the values that we know we will use multiple times. So we will change the way we access things in a way that things we load in our cache, we will use it multiple times. So we want to maximize how we use the things we have in the cache. So at the high level, that sounds okay, but how do we do that? So we want to change the way we are accessing our matrix to make sure that things we brought in our cache, we use it multiple times. So here what we are doing is we are splitting our loop over k. So k was going from 0 to n and incrementing by 1, but we have split it into two loops, and the new loop, it iterates 2 times for each k. So it is still doing the same thing, but we have just splitted our loop, the outer loop. And what we want to do is, we want to move that second loop over k in the inner loop. So essentially, what is happening? What's happening is, here in the inner loop, before we were touching, we are keeping one value of aik and using it n times. But now what we are saying that instead of keeping just aik, I also want to keep aik plus 1, so the next element in our matrix. And I want to do n computation over that next element too. So instead of having just one aik and doing n computation, I have two aiks, which are where we are doing n plus n computation. So what is happening with that? I guess I already talked about it. So another way to look at the same code is, instead of having the inner loop, I could have just said that I will just write one extra line of code where before I was using aik and now I'm using aik plus 1. So within the inner loop, instead of processing one value of aik, we are processing two values of aik. And how is it affecting our locality? So first of all, now we have more locality in our B, because we are putting the summations in the same element bij, so it has more temporal locality. Then we have more spatial locality for aik, because now we are accessing two consecutive elements. And I guess we still have good spatial locality here. So this element and this element, which we already had, even if we had just one element, we still had that. So the new thing is, we have more temporal locality for aij per element. So for aij, aik, we had n computation, now we add one extra element, aik plus 1, and we have additional n computation. And by increasing how many times we are using the blocks that we fetch in our cache, we can reduce the miss time, so we are reusing them more often. So how does this performs? So here again, in the x-axis, we are varying the size of n. And in the y-axis, we have read misses per 1 kilo instruction. And you can see that the number of read misses significantly reduces even when we have just tried to keep two elements of aik. So that's all, that actually reduced the miss rate by half, because now we are doing extra n computation per miss. Any question here? Okay. So we just splitted our loop over k. But what happens if we try to do the same thing for other loops? And we could do that. So here what we are doing is we are even splitting the loop over I. And within, now within the inner loops, instead of processing two elements, we are processing processing four elements. Because we have these two inner loops, which each iterates two times. Instead of just looking at the code in the inner loop, we could have just written the elements we are accessing, and that's how it would have looked. So here what we are doing is we are trying to load four elements around AIK and trying to maximize the number of times we reuse these blocks once we bring them in our cache. So in the first variation, we used AIK n times, and that was all the effectiveness we were getting. In the second version, when we split at k, we had two elements of AIK, so we had doubled the number of computations. But here, we are actually having four elements of AIK simultaneously in the cache, and we are reusing it over and over again. So for each line here, we keep AIK, multiply it n times, put it in our B. Then we get to the next one, next element in AIK, AIK plus 1. And also, we are not only going row-wise, we are also going column-wise. So essentially, it's a block which has four elements. And compared to the previous one, now we actually have some reuse at AKJ also. But most of the reuse is coming from this AIK. Any question here? Okay. So we only split two loops, and we had used this arbitrary number 2 for our block size, but that is not something like we just used it as an example, right? Like why not use 4 or 8 or 16? And essentially, we could do that. What we essentially want to do is we want to bring a block of data from our matrix, pin it in our cache, and reuse it as much as possible. Reuse the whole block. And the only restriction here is whatever we are touching in our block, like within this inner loop, we have to make sure that all these elements there fit in the cache. So here, this is a very generalized cache blocking, where we have, now we have three extra loops in addition to the main three loops. And basically, these inner loops, they say that whenever we will bring a block of elements from A, and we will actually multiply it with a block of A, and all the results will go to a block of B. And you can see that essentially this code becomes really complex. So here I haven't specified what is the size of the block. So this is generic IJK. And if you're not too careful, it may happen that the calculations here may not what you are expecting. So essentially what people do is we use a wrapper function or an inner function where we provide as a parameter what are the input and output matrix and tell the function where is the starting point of the block and ending point of the block. So essentially, we have this partial square function, which does computation over one block. And within the main function, we will call these partial square for each of the blocks that we want to process. So I think this will be helpful when you start doing your assignments later. But let's try to look at whatever I said so far visually. We had this input matrix A, and we have our output matrix B. And this is the one where the ordering is Kij. So essentially what we were doing was we were taking one Aik, and then we were multiplying it with a row of A, which is at row K. And whatever the result of the multiplication was, we were putting in a row in B. So the red elements here, we multiply it, put it here, then we move to the next element here, multiply it with Aik, put in the next block, and so on. So this is what this was our first version. But what's the problem here? The problem here is this Aik, when we touch it, we bring this whole block, and we were using it n times, so because there were n items to multiply. So definitely this was cached. But what happens to these two rows? So these elements A, K, J, they only get reused when we change our middle loop. So that means that any of these elements can still be in the cache only if this row, the entire row, fits in our cache. If the cache is smaller and we evade something, we cannot exploit any locality. And for this row, most probably we don't exploit any locality here because it's used in the outmost loop. So it is highly likely that whenever you use this element again, we just evicted it because we access so many other things in between. So the inefficiency is coming from that if the row didn't fit in the cache, essentially we are just keeping one element in the cache. So this is the one where we are getting all the reuse. And if there is somehow the row fits in the cache, then so we reuse this Aik and maybe these elements of our row. But essentially all the other things that we are using in our matrix, they don't fit in the cache. So there is no way we are exploiting the locality we have. And that is the problem we are trying to solve using blocking. So with blocking, what we are saying that we don't want to load these whole rows until we have made sure that anything we are computing with Aik or around the values with Aik is all done. So instead of using just one element of Aik, we fetch a block of Aiks, and then we, in the first version where we just splitted our loop K, that will still mean that it's kind of similar, like we will go through all the rows, multiply the elements, put it here, and spatially go through it. But that kind of is similar to what we have seen before. We exploit some more temporal locality for Aik, but there is no way to put this whole row in the cache if n is larger. So that's why essentially we block in the all dimensions of our loops. We have this block for Aik, and even for the other two input and output, we only calculate the things that will be used using this block, multiply it, and put it in this block. So instead of just going through one row, now we were going through a multiple blocks of elements, even in this AKJ and this BIJ. So when we have splitted all our loops, this is the form of blocking we are exploiting. And you can think about, we essentially just made our matrix smaller. So essentially you can think about that from the beginning, you have this smaller matrix, this smaller matrix, this smaller matrix, and you do the same row column multiplication and get the results. But the difference is this one, these green blocks, they should fit in the cache so that we have maximized our reuse. And once we are done, we move to the next block and try to maximize the reuse again. But if somehow our block size is too big and these three blocks don't fit in our cache, then we get into the trouble again. So this is very important to figure out that what is the block size that should be used that will exploit the whole cache. Any questions here? So we can still optimize the code further, but we haven't talked about it. So we will talk about it in the next class. But this is basically an introduction to that, given any kind of operation on matrices, we could use blocking to make the performance way better, like way, way better. This is all I had today. See you in the next class.